or listening to them. Well, there's probably so much, it's impossible to read it all. But yes, GWE stuff, I think, and the, what is it, DiffQ, or I can't remember the name of the package right now. DIPA, that's it. I know, it's a logical name, but I never remember it. But all of those routines are available to those of you using MATLAB. If you're using ImageJ, I'm not quite sure how you would link them in. But I bet that there's probably something similar out there if you look. Okay. So, Norman, have you finished the project?
No.
That's okay. You're with everyone else.
Do you have any images of the traffic circle?
No. I'm going to have to talk to Scott. I don't know that we took any images of a traffic circle. I recognize stuff on Cedar Center. It looked like you weren't in a traffic circle. There is, though, that one big intersection, wherever that is, that you just sat there and watched the traffic go by. Was it? Okay. Probably at some point we need to get traffic circle info, but we'll make Scott do that. That's what he's getting paid for. But I suspect you're having enough difficulty as it is with color variation. And so you've thrown out color.
The shadow comes, the ratio between the TV channel.
Yes.
Too bright, the ratio is smaller. If too dark, the ratio is smaller.
Now, does the U change? Are you working in RGB, or are you working in HSI, or YUV, or? You've tried HSI? Does the HS stay moderately constant? Because we haven't gotten to it. This is Chapter 10 material. There are two ways to segment an image. The obvious one that I was talking about is you unify a region by a common characteristic such as color. Okay? And in fact, maybe that's all you want. Maybe all you want to do is segment. You don't care what the color is, but you want regions which are very long and narrow that have the same color. You may want to think about that. Look at Chapter 10. Okay. But there are ways, and in fact, if you remember what Simon Melikan was talking about when he was here, he was using Huff transforms, canny operators. And in fact, if you stop and think, which order was he probably using those in? Canny, then Huff. And I'll even give you a hint. When you do the Huff transform, and I think I sent out the information from Scott that he said that the camera was mounted on the roof of the van, and I think 2 feet over from the center. So that probably gives it a height of, what, 7 feet, 6 feet, something like that off the ground. I'm not sure how important the geometry is. The big thing is that it's constant from image to image. And if you stop and think about it, if you're driving straight, you could even have separate algorithms for straight line driving and turning. But if you're driving straight, you're only looking for lines within a very narrow window. You know, although you might be looking at the lines that are going like this too. You know, the stop line. Now, you can simplify your problem and prove that it works in a certain domain, like nice, bright, sunny images, and maybe you have something which throws out all the dark ones, or the ones in which the color you know, in which the illumination changes. But yes, that is one of the big problems. Shadows. Change in light level. And I'm going to talk about that in one of the images today, as I said, about homomorphic image processing and how we can separate the illumination from the reflectance. But we'll get to that. Anyone have any comments, suggestions, anything other than you're having lots of problems with color? Is that because of the wraparound?
No, because the actual transform itself tends to have like some large blotchy regions, almost like if you've got artifacts in the DVD where you get a motion. But there is a complete code example in the MATLAB help for how to implement, finding all the muck lines and finding out what the muck is going is. That's all.
And you see, that stuff can be very, very useful. I mean, would you guys like me, I shouldn't say guys, would all of you like me to turn on the Blackboard discussion group so you can share hints with each other? Or do you prefer just talking about it here in class? I mean, at least you can give URLs, share code, and share examples. I think those were HSI, yeah.
Right. If looking at the color types and saying there's clutch, you actually have the result they say.
Ah.
And it keeps the constant cube over the large segment of what it tries to do. Basically low pass.
Yes. Bill? Were you looking at compressed JPEGs? Or TIFFs better? We actually talked.
Stop using it altogether. The HSI conversion is like 50 milliseconds by itself.
And you see, that's one of the prices you pay for color. It is really expensive to do anything other than RGB. Has anyone actually tried the MATLAB gradient operator, color gradient? Has anyone found it? Okay. I will take a look through my stuff and see if I can find it, but I think it's in the DIPM library. If not, it's in the GWE book, but a color gradient. Because let me go back to what I was saying earlier. I think, for example, your situation is that you're going for a constant color. And because of background illumination levels changing all the time, that's just killing you.
I use the ratio.
Okay.
When the lights go up, the ratio is also changing.
Okay. Right. Okay. So you've even been using intensity then somehow. Okay. But you may want to consider one of the things is instead of just finding the region of constant color, you may want to find a region which simply has a boundary around it. You can do either edge-based segmentation or area-based segmentation. You're doing what would be called area-based segmentation. In edge segmentation, what you do is you try to find a complete or reasonably complete boundary around it, which would come from potentially just doing Project 2 type stuff with an edge operator. Has anyone tried running an edge operator in R, G, and B and comparing them? Anne?
I do just only for the this kind of line.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to track along the line with the similar RG and B edges.
Okay.
And all the texture I get.
Okay. So, anyone want to throw out a nugget Any last useful information? Okay. Now, I will tell you that I've had one request, not from you, any of you, but from our department office, to cancel the class next Tuesday because of the department student open house. They're going to have food and, I guess, raffles and prizes and all kinds of stuff from 4 to 6. And I'm sort of thinking, maybe you can all go over, eat all the food, drink all you want, and then come back here. I don't know. I really don't know. I know that they're having a costume contest and all kinds of stuff. But I know how graduate students and food go together. I was thinking maybe what we could do instead of canceling class is I think you could probably eat your way through everything in the first 45 minutes, and we could just start class 15 minutes later. Good idea. That probably sums it up. So,
can we get like a special 490 pass to get to the head of the line?
I don't know. And you've got to watch out because undergraduates are like locusts. Nothing personal. But they'll eat anything. You're really fighting some strong competition when undergraduates are involved. Well, I don't know. Check it out tomorrow when they have the faculty open house, and then they're having the separate student open house. I would hope that the quantities of food would be, for the students, at least 3 or 4 times that for the faculty. We'll see. Okay. Well, I'd like to get back into Chapter 4. There is a chance that we might finish up Chapter 4 today, and we'll probably go into Chapter 5. You've actually seen a lot of Chapter 5 already. It's called Image Restoration, and it turns out that's where some of the warping and stuff is. But anyway, where we were the last time was we had just done an ideal low-pass filter. You've probably forgotten all of that over fall break. Boy, I'm getting messed up. But the key point here was simply the original image, we implemented an ideal low-pass filter, and if you read your textbook, and you see ILPF, if you see an I in front of anything, it's ideal. And the key thing that we really want to see, which is going to motivate us to look at other filters, is you can see it here, you can see it here. This is what we call ringing. Okay? And it's not too bad when our ideal low-pass filter, remember, we based it upon this idea. We looked at the two-dimensional Fourier transform. This is what you would get if you would run FFT2 and center it. Remember the centering. Okay? And these go from 0 to 255. First ring is at 230, 80, 30, 15, and 5. We're going to use the same rings for all of the image processing. But we are going to change the filter. With the ideal filter, which is just simply 1 inside the ring, 0 outside. Remember, we're multiplying the filter by the Fourier transform of the image. Because it's a hard transition, we get that ringing, and in general, you don't like that. You don't want that. And that'll motivate us to look at some other filters. Now, before I do that, I want to show you this right here. Whoops, I better not get their picture. Okay. This is, and you always want to think about which domain you're in. This is the frequency domain. The way you typically start the design of a filter is you usually start in the frequency domain. Anyone in here done filter design? What domains have you started in typically? Frequency or time? Frequency. And that's what we're going to do here, because this is our ideal low-pass filter. In the frequency domain, we multiply the Fourier transform by, that is the Fourier transform of the image, by the filter in the frequency domain. What does it look like in the spatial domain? And you could implement it. Remember back when we did the Sobels, back when we did all of those filters, the Gaussian filters, everything, where we took a mask and slid it over the image? You can do exactly the same thing. How? You inverse Fourier transform the image. If you do an inverse Fourier transform for this image, what you will get is something that looks basically like a sine x over x. The interesting thing is notice that it has positive and negative values. That actually is the source of your ringing, that it goes negative. Okay, and we'll take a look in a moment at filters which don't exhibit this property. Also, a comment on filter design. If you want to actually design a filter, what's normally done is you take, and this is a little bit different than what we've done before, this is something new. You will take the frequency domain, multiply it by the minus 1, to, in this case, to the u plus v power, shift it back to the origin, do your transform, and then shift it back. That may not make a lot of sense, but it works. The reason is, well, one of the reasons you want to do it that way is, remember, this is in the center of the image. It's displaced from the origin, which is technically up there. Mathematically, what happens when you inverse Fourier transform something that's got a shift? You're going to get complex phase, which accounts for the shift. By shifting this up to the origin, you get rid of any phase terms. And that's why you want to do everything at the origin, even though you're in the frequency domain. So instead of doing it before like we did minus 1 to the x plus y, you're going to do minus 1 to the u plus v, and you're shifting it back. You transform it, no phase terms, and then you shift it back to get the centered image in the space domain. This is usually the most complicated thing, the minus 1 to the x plus y, minus 1 to the u plus v. If you use this technique and you get a wrong result, that's probably why. Okay. So, that's the cross section basically going right across, or rather, that's the cross section of the spatial equivalent going right across there. Now, technically, because this is an intensity, it's really not showing the negatives properly. What's usually done is we'll square it to show only intensity or take the magnitude. Now, what's below it? Something different. the shifting or sifting property of Fourier transforms. Okay, basically, in very simple explanation, and these are now, that I think was a 5-pixel hole. These are only 1 pixel, so they're going to be narrower. Okay, but what kind of image do we get from that kind of filter mask? Well, if this one did that, basically what happens is that we're going to get a response like that at every location where we have that 1 pixel. Basically, this is an impulse. You're multiplying an impulse by that, and it's shifting it to each of the 5 locations and summing it up. Now, we're not going to do too much with convolution until the end of today's lecture, when I want to talk about the difference between convolution and correlation. And there's not much difference mathematically. Okay. Whoops. I've got to get rid of these stupid alarms. Okay. There are all kinds of other filters out there. We're only going to talk about 2 other kinds of filters. We're going to do a Butterworth, and there's a huge number of these kind of filters. The Butterworth filter, this is a representation in the frequency domain, and it looks like a Gaussian, but it isn't quite. I'm going to show you a Gaussian in a few moments. But the key thing is you can see how it's got a low-pass filter response in the frequency domain. So it's a hill. That's 1. These are all zeros. And I've shifted the origin of my frequency space to the center, N over 2, M over 2. Okay, it passes everything close to 0. That's sort of like the rings that we had earlier, but the rings went sharp. We're creating a much smoother transition. Okay, and we can plot that. This is now shown just like we were showing the intensity mask in the Fourier domain on the other. Instead of having a really hard on and off right there, we've smoothed it. This, by the way, is often called aperturing if you do it optically. You don't want to have sharp edges on anything. The reason is it makes it look like an ideal low-pass filter and you get ringing. This is very nice. It's smooth. And there are different orders. Okay. Butterworth filters. And I haven't used the notation, so I want to is a Butterworth filter. The N is the order of the polynomial. You can see we vary N, 1, 2, 3, 4. It changes the shape of the curve. We've got a D0. This is a cutoff, a nominal one. And that corresponds to the 0.5 point, and you can see all of these go through 0.5 at D0. That corresponds to the rings that we were using. Before they were sharp, now we sort of pick the center of the transition region. Okay, and DUV is what I wanted to show you. DUV is simply the distance in the frequency domain from the center. So if I want to look at the effect on the frequency here, I measure that distance there, and that's what DUV is. DUV equals the square root of U minus M over 2 squared plus V minus N over 2 squared. Because remember, our center after shifting is M over 2, N over 2. Okay? So all it is how far away you are. But it's circular. And that will come up a lot. But that's the Butterworth. Okay? Now, we implement it in the frequency domain. We Fourier transform the input image. We multiply that Fourier transform by this image, and then inverse Fourier transform. What do the test images look like? And I'm going to, in a couple slides, put all three of them side by side. You can really see the filters. But you can see it's very clear, no ringing. See how that has just gone away. Now, up here, it was so blurry you really couldn't tell much before. You still can't tell much now. Now, we'll talk about in a little bit how much filtering do you really want to do. Okay. That depends on your application. And in fact, sometimes you can get this filtering for free. Doesn't this look like a blurred image, both of these? Just defocus the lens on the camera, and you can get a low-pass filter for free. No computations whatsoever. Now, and I'm also going to point out one little thing here, which I didn't notice until now, but will come up hopefully in the last lecture or the last slide for today. Notice the black ring. Anyone ever heard of wraparound error? Anyone ever heard of aliasing? That is the image processing equivalent of aliasing, and we'll talk about it. That's right. For the rest of you, I'll explain padding in a few slides. But you're right. Yes. Now, these are just different implementations of the Butterworth low-pass filters. Okay? And one of the things that was not obvious is because we didn't do a high enough order. What we did in the last set of images, that was for an N equals 2 filter. Okay? And remember, the N equals 2, you can't see it very well, but it's the second one in there. Okay? Because here's something that happens. Okay, we're looking at the spatial representation, i.e., all we did was we went back there and inverse Fourier transform these. And any time I say these days, or in this lecture, I don't always tell you that we shifted, transform, and then shift it back. I'm just usually dropping the shifting. Okay, But we transformed those, and for different orders, a 1, a 2, a 5, and a 20. Okay. Now, with digital filters, you can implement high-order filters, usually relatively easily. The bad thing for you to think about is 1, always positive, n equals 2, tiny bit negative. Look what happens when we get up to 5 and 20. You've got negative regions. You'll get ringing if you use too high an order for a Butterworth filter. Excuse me. That's in the space domain. How about another filter? Physically, this one doesn't look a whole lot different from the excuse me. This shape in this plot, this intensity plot, of a Gaussian low-pass filter. And by Gaussian, it has a Gaussian shape. Okay? It's actually a little bit different. Okay. Note, it's not D, it's D squared. No square root. And it's not quite as obvious what the meaning of D0 is. Okay. You know, it doesn't have that nice definition that it went through the 0.5 magnitude point. Okay, it's just that it does get bigger as D0 gets bigger. That's probably the easiest way to remember it. Now, what's that look like when we filter images with it? And I will say, if you are in doubt about low-pass filtering, use a Gaussian. Overall, it's probably your best quality filter. This is the result of Gaussian low-pass filtering. Different D0s. We've kept, by the way, the same D0s in all three sets. I see no ringing, and, you know, with the n equals 2, there was an absolutely tiny bit of ringing, but you couldn't see it in the images. This, you know, it's hard to tell with the blurred ones, and notice you've got that same black edge. Okay, and the next slide, I went and put all three of them side by side. So, what do you think? I mean, this is the ideal low-pass filter. This is the Butterworth low-pass filter. That's the Gaussian low-pass filter. And I have to remember, what was it? I can't remember my cutoffs. What was it, 5, 15, and 30? Yes, 5, 15, and 30. And to me, it looks like there's some modest difference. I mean, obviously you get ringing here. But if you look at the Butterworth and you look at the Gaussian, I think the Gaussian looks a little bit better. If you really get into phase response and stuff like that, there can be. You can control characteristics in the pass band and the stop band, and that's more commonly used in time domain filter design. For image processing, I would say, well, I guess if you want to publish a paper, maybe you could do something with Butterworth, but I would probably just use Gaussian. And you'd have to be very, very good, because I think most of this work with Butterworth was done in the late 80s, early 90s. So that was done 15 years ago. And it looks like there might be some vertical lines, but I think that may just be due to the screen or the projector. But I would say, you know, if you stop and think about it, Gaussian low-pass filter with a D0 of 30, doesn't that look pretty acceptable to you? And if you stop and think about it, you've thrown away most of the image. Remember, where the 30 ring is, way back here. Let's see, 230, 80, 30. We're keeping only the information in that ring. Everything else is zeroed. So that's pretty good. And if you want it to Fourier transform, transmit only the information, well, it's not an ideal, so you can't transmit only the information in the center, but you can do some pretty good compression just by filtering. Now we're going to take a look at some of the other things that we can do. Anyone in here do OCR or ever tried to use OCR with your scanner? Okay. Have you had good success? Not so good success? And by the way, this might even be really relevant. Anyone going to vote next Tuesday? No, following Tuesday. They're going to do all of these absentee ballots. They have to scan, they expect for Cuyahoga County alone, 100,000 absentee ballots, maybe 120,000. There are four pages for each ballot. Okay, so that's on the order of 400,000 to 500,000 pages. Okay, and by the way, the real nightmare is that people fold them up to mail them in. These aren't stacked in a nice pile. So we won't go there. But first of all, if you're going to OCR, and this is if you're not doing it properly, okay, you're using a black and white binary image, bad. Use a grayscale or a color image, and you will get much better results. The problem is all of the gaps in the letters. I mean, you can look at that from a distance and say EA, but your eye is automatically low-pass filtering that. Sometimes you don't want too much detail. What's done over here is to actually run a Gaussian low-pass filter over it. And notice that it does a fairly good job, not perfect, of filling in the cracks in the letter. That will have a much higher probability of correct OCR than the one here. So keep gray, low pass filter, too high a resolution when you're OCRing usually isn't too very good. And for current commercial packages, it seems that the best resolution for OCR is somewhere between 200 and 300 dpi for normal stuff printed on an 8.5 by 11. You know, if you get really fine type, different story. Now, since I'm always looking out for ways for you all to support yourself through graduate school, you can do image processing. This is wrinkle removal. Okay? I am not kidding. This is what happens when you take this young lady's image and notice, let's see, this is the original. She's got wrinkles around her eyes. And I guess if you watch any daytime television or morning television, that is a horrible thing. And there are ads about creams and all kinds of things to fix that. You can do it in Photoshop. You can do it in MATLAB. I won't go there. But this is done with a Gaussian low-pass filter. Notice, and we're only looking at the detail around the eyes, okay? And notice, basically you've gotten rid of it. It really smooths it in well. And for those of you who have played with Photoshop, you can make different kinds of layers, apply a pen or a brush, and do your low-pass filtering around the eyes, touch it up, and charge a lot of money. It's amazing. And by the way, these are just simply two slightly different. That's a diameter of 80 pixels. Pretty much everything is usually 512 by 512, although this is a 1028 by 732, and this is a slightly bigger filter. So you can see there's a slight bit more wrinkle in the one on the right. Now, this might be more useful if we were using a satellite to get images for Dexter or something. Okay? This is probably a satellite image, because that's a pretty large area to get with a plane, unless it's a U-2 or something. But the key thing is that there are scan lines in here from the camera. There's a lot of horizontal scan lines. And for example, if you were going to take this map or this image and maybe warp it to put it on top of a map, you'd want to get rid of all of the fine line stuff. And what we've done here is just simply two different Gaussian low-pass filters. The objective is simply to find boundaries, which we could then use an affine, a warp, whatever, to map this or this to an honest-to-goodness map or some other data that we have. And you can see this is a first Gaussian low-pass filter, and that's a pretty tight one, 30. Okay. And that does a fairly good job of getting rid of the lines. It's not perfect. This one, okay, there are no lines. Of course, it's gotten pretty blurry. But one of the questions is, if all you want to do is find the mathematical transform, and all you're really interested in is mapping the contour, maybe you don't need all of the fine detail. I know, as students, you want to do every bit of detail. No, you don't have to. In fact, lots of times you want to get rid of detail.
Wouldn't it be better if they took the Gaussian image detection of laptop and independently the Gaussian on each layer? That way, the detail, like in the white area, you would keep all that detail in the line?
Oh, this is only, though, to find correspondence between two lines. The original is still there, and what you would do is actually warp the original. But you're using the low-pass filtered one to find the transformation, because you don't want any algorithm to get hung up on the scan lines. And, you know, in terms of stuff that you're doing, you might want to think about that. You know, do you have a lot of noise in your road surface? You may just want to smooth things out and look for coarse stuff. Now, with color, you'll have to think about how that alters your color. Color may not be the best thing. In fact, you may want to use a combination of intensity that is black and white, well, grayscale processing, and using color only to do things like fill in holes or something. usually the approach is multispectral, multisensory. One algorithm by itself probably won't be the best, but a couple together may work very well. Now, we've talked about low-pass filters. How about high-pass filters? And there's actually, and this, there's really a very, very simple way to relate the low-pass filter to the high-pass filter. And if you stop and think about it, this makes perfect sense. The high-pass filter in UV, and think about what the shapes of all of our filters look like. 1 minus H low-pass UV. Think about it. I just subtract 1 from the image that went like that. It inverts it. Same thing for the Butterworth. Inverts it. Same thing for the Gaussian. Inverts it. This is really interesting. Just H high pass equals 1 minus H low pass. And there's actually a very good analog to something we did previously. We didn't emphasize it. Unsharp mask. And that's one of those things that you often see as an option on scanners, image processors, etc. It's a high-pass filter. Now, it's usually implemented, the sharpened image, it's usually implemented in the space domain. Okay, the sharpened image is the original image minus an average. And what's an average? A low pass. It's not the best, but now that we've learned a little bit about how you design a low pass, we can make high passes by just doing the 1 minus low pass. And you can really see the difference here. By the way, the bottom is 0. That's where stuff gets attenuated. It's multiplied by 0. The top in each of these is 1. And that shows better over here. They're all centered. And you can see the difference. Basically, the Butterworth has a sharper transition than the Gaussian. And that's probably why the Gaussian works better. There are also a whole lot of really nice things. The Gaussian, lots of people have, I wouldn't say developed careers around Gaussians, but there are great mathematical properties of Gaussians, including the fact that the Fourier transform of a Gaussian is a Gaussian. So there's all kinds of cool things. And those are the three types. What do these look like in space? Those are the frequency domain representations. Okay? That could be how you design it. What do you do? You multiply by minus 1 to the u plus b to move it back to the origin. You do an FFT2, an inverse FFT, two-dimensional. That generates the spatial shape. And then you do a minus 1 to the x plus y to move it out and center it again. And that's what I did, that's what our author did here. Ideal. Notice all of the rings. Butterworth, Gaussian. What do you see in common about all of those? What? Well, the dot, okay, I agree, that is in common, but the big thing is, I was thinking more down here in this, which isn't apparent up there, there's a big spike right in the center. This is a characteristic of a spatial filter. Okay? And remember when you did Laplacian filters and stuff? Remember, it would have a big spike in the center and rings around it. That might be one way to help you think about it. You know, the question is now, well, I'm sort of jumping ahead of myself. We're going to find out that there's commonality between a high-pass filter and a derivative operator. Who knows? This might even be useful for the current project. Okay? Now, if we've got three filters, ideal high pass, Butterworth high pass, Gaussian high pass, what have we done with every one of these? We've taken our test image and we've filtered each one of them to see what we get. And this is what you get. Isn't this interesting? This is the ideal high pass filter. Okay, that's with different rings. Okay, but notice, or different circles, different D0s. But notice, isn't that doing a pretty good job of finding edges for you? Stop and think about it for a moment. Just physically, this makes a lot of sense. Okay, high pass. The highest frequencies occur where there are changes in the image. If you haven't encountered that statement before, trust me. So the edges have the most high frequencies. And notice how they show up. Okay, admittedly, it's a little dim. But that did a pretty good job of bringing out all the edges, didn't it? That is the ideal. Notice the ringing. Let's take a look at the Butterworth. That looks much better. And to be honest, I think all three of these are usable. And I think we've got one more, which is a Gaussian. And I should have put these side by side, but, whoops, ideal, bad. Butterworth, pretty good. I think if you look very carefully, whoops, I didn't want that one yet. I think if you look very carefully, you might say that maybe the corners on the rectangles are a little bit sharper, but when you get into Butterworth versus Gaussian, it's not that big an issue. Okay? Pretty much, they're going to do the same job. Now, here's where things get really interesting. What's a Laplacian look like? Have you ever in your courses talked about implementing a second derivative as a filter? Unlikely. Have you? What does a derivative filter look like? Well, this is actually what it looks like. How and why did we get there? Well, I want to say a little bit about it because it's not the most intuitive thing if you just look at that figure. The fundamental thing is that the Fourier transform of any derivative of a function of space ends up being Ju to the order of the derivative, f of u. Why do you get the ju? because we can change the order of differentiation and integration, because the Fourier transform is an integral. And what do you have in the exponent? An e to the minus j 2 pi ux. Okay? So you've got the ju x, and you take the derivative with x. Every time you take that, you get another ju. So that's why you get a ju to the nth power. You can try it. There's the same a very similar property for time domain Fourier transforms. Now, what that means is, what's the Laplacian look like? It's the sum of two second derivatives. What's going to happen? It's a sum, so I can take the Fourier transform of each term separately. And what happens is I get a ju, and since this is just a second derivative squared times f of u, whoops, oh, that one's just one dimension. This will be u and v, plus jv squared. The derivative is in y. And I think you can see, basically, we've got j, we end up getting a minus u squared plus v squared f uv. And so the argument is, that right there is your Laplacian implemented as a filter. A frequency domain filter is something you multiply the Fourier transform by, right? The frequency domain equivalent is then minus u squared plus v squared. This is, and it doesn't show any axis, but that peak point is the center of the picture. That would be my m over 2, n over 2. That's the point at which we want our u and v to be zero. Okay? Remember, we've shifted things. So that's our zero point, and because it's a negative function, it goes down everywhere from there. So that's your second derivative. This is what the intensity of that looks like. Actually, since it's all real, this is just what it looks like. The only difference is we pick 0, 0 to have a brightness of 1, which scaled the intensity. Okay? Now, what happens when you inverse Fourier transform that? That's what this is. And this is interesting. Hey, if you remember what the Laplacian looked like back in Chapter 2, okay, and we were doing things which looked a little bit like this. Remember, we would have a mask in the space domain for a second derivative, and it'd have a big negative peak in the center, and then there'd be a ring of smaller positive values around it. And note very carefully, there's nothing on the diagonals. What we've done here is we've taken that minus u squared plus v squared, plotted it, shifted it, inverse Fourier transformed it, and shifted it back. Okay? Because the Fourier transform is multiplicative. In other words, we're doing x separately and y separately. It ignored any off-diagonal terms. You get no diagonal terms. And remember, we talked about it back then, and we even had, maybe you remember, we did the north, south, east, west, and then we added a separate Laplacian, and we said for better edge performance, because we don't want it to be sensitive to just X or just Y, we want it to be equally sensitive to something at 45 degrees. Like if you look at those images for the road following, the lane following, those are at an angle. So what we've done is we've inverse Fourier transformed and with the appropriate shifts. This is what it looks like, and then we've blown it up and looked at it. No off diagonals. They're not there. And if you plot the intensity, it actually looks, well, actually, this would be the amplitude because it's positive and negative. Okay? And that corresponds roughly, you notice this is about minus, notice this is about, if this is 0, this is about minus 4, that's plus 1, and so we have a mask like that, which looks like some of the stuff that we got in chapter 2, way back when we didn't know anything about the frequency domain. And we were only doing derivatives, straight by their definition. So there's a link now between the Fourier domain filtering and the spatial domain. So you can synthesize in either one and transform into the other. And this is just an example of doing something in the frequency domain instead of the space domain. We actually did this back in, was it chapter 3 or chapter 2? Must have been in chapter 3. And we have the original image. Instead of doing the second derivative Laplacian operator in the space domain, what we did was we Fourier transformed it, multiplied it by the mask that we just had on there in the last slide, and then inverse Fourier transformed. Again, all the shifts being done appropriately, and that's what it looks like. We scale it so that you can see the detail a little bit more, and basically, how did we do the sharpening? It was just f of xy minus del squared f of xy. And we're going to find out that you can put different constants in here to basically make the picture look better. And that's what the next couple slides are. And hopefully we can get through these. Remember this picture? We did it a while back. And at that time, we were doing Laplacians. Okay, this just shows us doing a Laplacian in the frequency domain and then playing a few tricks with it. Okay, the original image. This is the frequency domain Laplacian filtered image. Transform, multiply by that Laplacian mask, inverse Fourier transform, you get that. That's equivalent to the second derivative that we did earlier. Now, okay, how a couple of these things are related. Unsharp mask, basically just a high pass. Now, high boost, and none of these are all that different. We throw in a constant. Gesundheit. You might be allergic to Laplacians. Okay. We have a high boost. And you can do this yet another way. I break up this term. It's a minus 1 f of xy. And then I'm going to pull off an f of xy. And what's that? So, what you can do is you can subtract, basically, you compute a low pass or an average, and you subtract it from different amounts of the original image. This is boosting the high frequencies. And that's what they've done here. These two are what are called high boost images. Okay, and the only difference is the value of A. And when you're subtracting a low pass, and, you know, it's not quite a high pass because you're boosting the high frequencies. You're emphasizing edges by doing that. And it's very sensitive. Notice this is A equals 2. This is A equals 2.7. You have to really play with these to get good-looking images. But people, I mean, if you're a graduate student, like this would be if you were a graduate student in materials, probably. In this case, it's geological sciences. And you had one image of your data, you'd really want to make it look good. Get the best data. So there's a lot of motivation. Here's the motivation if you would be a doctor. Okay. Original image, chest x-ray. Butterworth high pass filter. Okay. This one, something yet different. High frequency emphasis. If you haven't gathered, there's a lot of names for things which are very similar. Okay. With the high frequency emphasis, we just had an A here. We're going to get an A and a B. That's all it is. And the H, let's see, high frequency emphasis, and this now is in the frequency domain, equals a constant plus V high pass. Basically, they just added another constant to shift it around. Okay, and it turns out that A is really important. This was done with A equals 1/2, B equals 2. Okay, because it shifts the whole brightness of the image up and down. Think about it. What's a DC term in the frequency domain? It's the constant. It's the average brightness of the total picture. So by changing that term, you're making this bright and dark. And then here comes our old friend, histogram equalization. Remember that? So you can spend a lot of time making these images look great. And unfortunately, I'm right at the end of today's lecture. This is when things get the neatest. this is a homomorphic filter. It doesn't look that way just by looking at it. I'll tell you what it is and then shut up for today's lecture. And then we'll look at how it actually works the next time. But the idea is that any image is composed of two parts. And this is very similar to a computer graphics approach. It's an illumination at every point X, Y in the image, multiplied by a reflectance. And the key idea is, how can you separate I from R with a frequency domain filter? Now that's not obvious, is it? That's what it looks like. Why? And it actually does some pretty nice results. We're going to talk about it mathematically how it works. But notice, in effect, it brings out details in the dark area and sharpens the image. We're going to talk about what are the fundamental assumptions about why that works next time. And we're probably going to start on Chapter 5 and get it out of the way. Unless there are any special requests for example, Chapter 10 techniques or anything to help you with your projects. So if you come up with something you think you'd like to know, I'll move up the order on it. Okay? And next time, I'll send out an email. Next time we'll start 15 minutes late so you can grab up food and compete with the undergraduates. That's on Tuesday. We're not going to give up the whole lecture, but I think we can afford 15 minutes. Okay?